to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Assalamu alaikum, namaste, jambo, greetings to you all. Welcome to the Resettled Radio, brought to you live by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. I'm your host for this 1 hour show, Gadwakshul. I will play you music from different parts of the continent. And the artist that is singing now is Alpha Blondie from Ivory Coast. He is the African reggae man, and I have been listening to him for a long time. Yeah, he's the one who's singing. So I will play different music, different artists from different parts of the world. Welcome. Today is Saturday, 21st of September 2019. How fast is it going to 2020? Very soon. We are already past the middle of the year. So I will be taking you through this 1 hour show, as I stated before, and we have been expecting a guest, Fatima, a young youth activist from Sudan, originally from Sudan, and is a Sudanese Kiwi. She is expected to be here on a time, but while she's not here, I will be discussing with you some stuff. So first, what is the role of the youth issues? You know, some of you might remember Sudan was in uprising a few months ago, and it was very bloody, not an easy one. There were a lot of deaths in the streets. People were taken out of the houses, killed, beaten, imprisoned, tortured. Some did not even make it out. It was very very emotional and very stressful. So the state apparatus usually know who to run after, you know, who to chase. And so they know all the leaders of the uprising and hunt them down. So now the issue is, what role did the youth play in that uprising? What did the Sudanese youth play in that uprising? So it's not only Sudanese youth. It can be youth in general, because it did not start in Sudan. It did start with Arab Spring some time back, with Algeria, and then it came all the way to Tunisia, and it is spread all over the world. So it's popularly known as Arab Spring. So that was the name. It was started with one guy who was selling, I don't know, I think he was selling onions or potatoes, and I don't know, it was beaten by the security. I don't know what happened, and people got angry, and yep, it pulled the uprising throughout Algeria and yeah, and everything else. It was so crazy. Yeah, Tunisia, Algeria, all those countries. So it was where it started. Now, it has come to Sudan not long ago. It was just a few months ago, and it still is not stable yet, but, you know, the deaths has stopped. So what is the role the youth played in that uprising? So when it started, they were so angry of the high price of bread and commodities being sold in Sudan. You know, the basic stuff, the sugar, the bread, milk, whatever you need to buy, the basic necessities that people need to consume. And one guy categorically said, this is a guy who involved in the uprising, and he was interviewed by France 24, Radio France, and he said, some people have described Sudanese uprising as bread riots, because people were not happy about the price of the bread, because it went up in a short period of time, and they're not stopped. It went up and up and up. So he was relating to that. Some people have described the Sudanese uprising as bread riots. But people are taking to the streets for much more than bread. The generation leading the uprising is the one born and raised during the 30-year rule of Omar al-Bashir. Omar al-Bashir is the president of Sudan. He went to power in a military coup in 1989 in June. And he has been in power for 30 years. So the man continues saying, they have been the main target of the regime's Islamization and Arabization policies that have been particularly harsh against women's freedoms and rights. Now, young Sudanese women are at the heart of the uprising with the slogan, "Just fall, that's all. Just fall, that's all." And that's the end of the quote. So the guy who is saying this in the interview with France 24, the Radio France, his name is Khaled Siraj Aldeen. He's a journalist and a young activist, you know, in Sudan. So what happened when there was uprising in Sudan? The use of social media was very crucial in this because young people gathered. They know how to assemble, but use of social media helped them because they come to the gathering stations over all capital Khartoum. And whenever the youth involved in such things such as uprising, it really take a toll on the economy because things will not be, business will not be as usual. And the shops were closed and not just closed, but closed for many days, And food was not in the market, and buses were not traveling like the way they used to. So people stranded, and the economy was so bad. You know, the Sudanese pound crashed, like went down really very low, and against the dollar. So the trade was affected pretty much in the time of riots. So one particular woman, you know, took the risk. A young woman, very young woman, took the risk and created the Minbar Shat. Minbar Shat is a group of protesters composed of women, young women. And this is where they chat what to do, where to go. It's enclosed one, it's an enclosed group. And this is where they had a discussion of who got involved in the security and who are those people. So they were exposing the security elements who disguised as the military, not as military, but as civilians in the civilian setups. You know, all the setups, places inside Khartoum, all over Khartoum. The security also got involved in that, you know, disguised as civilians taking part of the protest. But actually that was not the case. And this group, what they do is to expose those people. And some of them, because some of them might be known within their communities, and they were exposed. This also helps them. So the Minbar, that's the name, Minbar Shat was mainly used by women to expose their husbands too, who involved to crack down the protesters. There were husbands who were aligned with National Intelligence Security Service, one of the forefront in beating up people as a government agent. And, you know, they put masks, they shame faces, they don't want to be recognized, but the husbands know them. So they would also expose them in those group shots. So that has helped the group to go forward and to discuss things that should not be discussed in the streets, in the closed door there, in the shot group, and that has helped them. These are the powers of the young people, and because the young people have come forward, so this has energized the whole country. So intellectuals came, the professionals, and such as the doctors, the teachers, the nurses, the, you know, the lawyers. It was very big. And then President Bashir, they are not lost. He stepped down in what seems to be a military coup within his camp, but they disguised that this would be a civilian route, but it did not go that way. And so the thing, uprising continued until the demands of the civilians has been met. So the whole thing, why I bring this one, is to see the power of the youth. So the youth are the leaders of tomorrow, and if they are not considered in anything being done, so it means they have been left out, and it means we have, you know, diminished the leaders of tomorrow. So what can be done? What can be done is to involve the youth in anything that is being done. So what we do here, even in ARCC, we involve the youth. We have the youth group, youth body called Youth United Voice, where they can be themselves, where they can make their own decisions, where they can have their own events, where they can consult on their own without intervention by any management team, and they can build their confidence. You know, it's about pushing them forward, let them go, because when the young people are there and do the things on their own, you know, they are very amazing people. So that's what we are talking about today, the power of the youth, what youth are capable of doing, because we normally underestimate the power of the youth whenever they want to take control about what they do. And that's not right. So we have a lot to discuss today, and when we come back after this break, we will see you know, the impact of the early marriage in Africa, in Asia, in many parts of the world. It is now growing very fast, and some countries have no policies to stop it. Instead, they practice it, and how the practice can be stopped. So this is next after Awele Longomba, the Congolese artist, song.
Sugar de Bamenda, Fami Foto, Jisha Mangu.
Mm-hmm. She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
That's Lisa Keys. Welcome back. If you have just joined us, welcome back to Russell Radio, brought to you live by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. And I'm your host for this 1 hour show, Ngalwak Shul. We are live from this studio every Saturday, 1 hour from 4:45 p.m. to 5:55 p.m. New Zealand local time. And today is a very bright day. It's sunny. It's a good day for a walk. I took a walk this morning, and you know, it's good to walk for your own mental well-being, and it's good to have a sunshine outside. We have been in winter for too long, and yeah, that's what is happening. So we have been talking about the uprising in Sudan. So the youth took to the streets and in a powerful way, and saying no to the things that were affecting the nation, including the young people. And so we have been talking also about the power of the social media there, what the social media played, the role of the social media. They state the Sudanese state, the security organs shut down the internet, but they did not stop the youth to assembly, to come to their sit-in groups. Even though the power, the social media was shut down, so the young people were there, fired up in the street. So young people are the future of tomorrow, as we always say. But there are some countries, somewhere in this world, that do not believe in that, thinking that they have not been young themselves. I don't know why they have that idea. Since we have been in their shoes, we should know better what they need, because we have been there. They have never been in our shoes, and they should not know what we experience. But for us, we can understand them, because we have been there. We used to be young people like them. I'm not young, but I used to be young. So I knew what I needed at that time, and I should understand my young kids better than they can understand me. Because they don't know, they have not been in my shoes. So, the power of the young people and the role of the social media in social issues. So, before we go to the break, before I say it, we will talk about the early marriage. The early marriage is affecting a lot of communities nowadays. Even here in New Zealand, it's not spoken about, but it's happening in some communities. And people know a lot about the arranged marriage. But within arranged marriage, too, there are a lot of scenarios in there. There's something to do with a forced marriage when it comes to the girl, And I'm not saying the arranged marriage is bad. It's really good, amazing, because your parents are choosing a man or a woman they know already. And they say, the gene has to be protected. You don't bring a gene where there will be a thief tomorrow, where there will be a killer tomorrow. No. So they know themselves better. They know themselves better, and they will know if their girl is married off to that family, so the girl will be fine. It's about the girl now. It's good. I have been with people who got married through culturally arranged marriage, and their marriage is still stable up to now, and they've been married for the last 15 years. That's great. But there are things that happen there, the things that we do not see. It depends from one culture to another culture. And I know some countries have no protection mechanisms to protect those who are vulnerable in this system of early marriage or cultural arranged marriage. So early marriage, it happens when the girl, it's all the time about the girl, not the boy. Because the parents, in some countries, they treat the girl as a commodity, Oh, this girl, now we will get things out of her, when she's married off. In some cultures, like where I come from, a girl is worth of 40 cows. 40 cows, that the average. You cannot go below that. You can go higher, but you cannot come below that. That's the minimum. So if you have two girls, three girls, so you are a millionaire there. How many cows now? 40 by 3. You've got 120 cows. So that's a lot. And uncles are there, will come and take their share, both sides, uncle from boys, from girl's side. Because it's a man who will pay the dowry, and the dowry is in 40 cows per girl. So the parents will see that this is an opportunity to marry off the girl, against her wish, and the girl will be married off to the man, to the boy or to the man, and in the worst case scenario, to the older man. And this is very terrible. But the constitutions of some countries have no protection mechanism to protect the vulnerable, like the case of South Sudan. It did not say what is the normal age a girl should be married off. It did not say 17, it did not say 18, it did not say 20, it did not say 15. So as long as you desire to marry off a girl, so you go. You say, I married this girl, and, you know, these guys who are working in the government, they have stolen public money, so they become millionaires overnight and pay the girl's parent maybe $50,000, and tomorrow a girl will be beaten. If you don't marry this guy, we're going to kill you or we're going to cut you off. This is terrible. These are the parents doing this to their own daughter, you know, because of the commodities, because of the materials. What are the money? What are the cows? Compared to human life, you cannot sell, you cannot determine the human value in terms of material, whether it's a money or whether it's a animal, whether it's whatever it is. You cannot evaluate human dignity with material. No, it cannot be. And especially from a parent. I'm a parent, I got 4 kids, and I do not wish to do that. That's why I bring this topic today, because this is very important to discuss about early child marriage. So some kids give birth at the age of 15. They don't even know how to take care of the baby, let alone acting like a wife. This is a disaster. This is a disaster, and some governments are not doing anything, and instead they are promoting it. So what can be done? What can be done about this one? The Constitution is silent. The president, I don't know. I don't know when was the last time I read about how many wives the president had, you know, or have. You know, our president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, I don't know how many wives, and when he's on camera, he will say one wife, and we know how many kids does he have. And, you know, even 2 years ago, he impregnated 2 girls, you know, and you know, with intimidation from the security. We don't know. You know, things like that. This is what is happening. So, there's this girl, her name is Nyamal Tuor, is from South Sudan, is a student at Yale. I know this girl, we used to be together in Tennessee with her birth parents, and she's the only South Sudanese girl to go to Yale University in the United States. So she's talking about feminism. And she said, this is my mother's feminism. So let's hear what she said to you. She was speaking in a TED talk at Yale University, and I think she took that personally, and we will see, we will make some reflection on that when she finished, and it is 14 minutes long, so not too long. I hope you will get something out of it, and then we will make some reflection of what she said out there.
In November of 2018, a 17-year-old South Sudanese girl named Yolong went off the market. Her parents had auctioned her off to the highest bidder, a South Sudanese business tycoon who was much older than she. He had already had 9 other wives. He had paid for Yolong's hand in marriage and for her freedom with 500 cattle and 3 V8 cars, totaling to about $35,000. Now, when this happened, I remembered viewing this and following this case and realizing that it was the first time that I had been able to follow a highly publicized marriage procedure from my culture online. And I remember following Yolong's case in despair and fatigue and wondering, what could I possibly do about this? What could anyone do about this? Now, Yolong's case is not specific to her. In fact, virtually every Nuer South Sudanese woman that I grew up around was married off in this way. My mother was married off in this way. My grandmother, my great-grandmother. This institution of marriage, these Nuer marriage practices have been going on for generations and generations and generations. It has persisted through many, all different political eras of Sudanese society. It has persisted through Arab Anglo-colonialism. It has persisted through today's post-colonial independent nation state that South Sudan is in. And it has even come to affect the way that we live our lives as immigrants in the Western world. Today, I want to break down this institution of marriage and explain exactly what keeps it going in this day and age. I also want to explore exactly how women in these in this institution are able to self-actualize and become independent women. So my name is Naimal Tour, and I am a South Sudanese, and I'm also a third-year student here at Yale University, and I make documentaries as a hobby. So my family originates from South Sudan. My family originates from South Sudan, which is the world's newest country. It was created in 2011 after over half a century of grueling war against the northern British Arab colonizing regimes. And I want to specify that today I will be talking specifically about Nuer tribal practices. So South Sudan has a number of many different tribes, and the way that people conduct themselves with regards to marriage differs. And I do not want this to be a sort of generalization. So specifically with marriage practices today, it'll be about the norm. Now, if you've seen anything about South Sudan in the news or followed any stories online or on TV, you've probably seen an image that looks a lot like this. A field of many cattle with great big majestic horns. Sometimes there's a little South Sudanese boy who's tending to the cows. And this image is very prominent for my culture for two specific reasons. For one, cattle represents a sort of currency for my traditional economy. Secondly, cattle is the key to holding power. And those who are able to hold cattle are men, so power men. And so in traditional Nuer society, meaning before colonialism and the introduction of like capitalism, traditional Nuer society mostly operated under something called the cattle blood bond economy. And so this is basically an allocation of resources. It's an economy, but it is a three-part economy that works to justify and perpetuate this tradition of marriage. Now, there are three parts to this economy. And the first, as you may have guessed, is cattle. And like I said before, cattle is a way to have power. And this power is used to organize society. It is used to form relationships and to do so through marriage. So as I had talked about with Nyalong's case, in order to be married, you have to be, as a woman, in order to be married, you have to be sort of bought for a bride price of cattle. And typically, the cattle ranges from 30 to 50 cattle, totaling to $250 US each. And so cattle is the key to holding power, creating relationships. And it's important to create relationships because this leads us to the second part of the cattle blood bond economy, which is blood. And when I say blood, it seems like a scary, like dystopian, I don't know, sort of ritual, but it's not. Blood just means offspring. Blood just means creating more life. And this life and having children is absolutely crucial to Nuer male identity because it is a way that Nuer men are able to continue their legacy, is a way that Nuer men are able to pass on their life and existence through these children. Furthermore, it's extra beneficial if you have many daughters because then you can sell them off to create more, to gain more cattle and to have more power. So this cattle blood bond economy is a sort of insidious cyclical sort of system that perpetuates male power and really to affirm male identity. So the more cattle you have, the more of a man you are. Something interesting that I learned about in my research is that in traditional Nuer society, it was considered a very shameful act for one to sell their cattle because it was as if you were selling a part of yourself. You were selling a part of your agency and you were becoming less of a man. So E.E. Evans Pritchard is a very famous early 20th century cultural anthropologist, and he was the first anthropologist to study and document Nuer society and Nuer culture. he talks about this in relationship between cattle, power, and men by saying that the fundamental identity and oneness between cattle and men comes from this relationship's ability, existential ability, to transcend some of the most profound human frailties. And therefore, men are able to achieve a greater sense of mastery over their world, meaning death can become surmountable, infertility can become reversible, and illness something that can be actively defined and cured. So in the face of these human frailties, when resources necessary to sustain a long human life are scarce, when life dependency or when life expectancy may seem short or may be cut short, the possession of cattle allows for the Noor man to extend his life through his children. So it's best to have as many children as possible. And if you have enough cattle, you can marry as many women as possible to have more children and to sort of live on and have a greater legacy. And in this system, women are really a means to achieve that. But what about the woman's livelihood in this situation? Does the Noor woman have the ability to find and exercise their personhood in the situation? How can she accomplish this when she's been taught that she has no space to do so in this system? Well, as I said before, I'm a film documentarian, and last year I became really interested in learning exactly how this system works and why it still operates today. And I decided to use whatever power I had outside of the system in order to amplify the voices of the women around me who are currently in the system. And so what I did is I learned about the system, and I thought about my own positionality in with regards to this institution. So for example, and in my relationship to the system. So for example, I am a product of the system, but I will never be a part of the system. So you don't have to worry, like no South Sudanese American children are ever going to face this really, because it's just not feasible here and it's not necessary here. But I decided to make a film in order to create a space for the women in my life to speak out about their situation and to speak for themselves in a way that is safe and in an environment that is outside of just when they are with each other. So I created my documentary, and I decided to share a little clip with you all today. And just as a note, the video may seem a bit weird because I blacked out a part of the screen to make sure that these women's identities can remain anonymous and that they can remain safe.
It's a build-up. Now we can pay back.
Now we can have
a little bit of money. You can leave some. You can leave some.
The 10 kids, the 15 kids,
yeah.
We can eat up. The lady have to cook every day like this food.
Every day.
Welcome back. Welcome to Rosario Radio, brought to you live by ARCC on Planet FM. Thank you for tuning in, and you have been listening to Nyamal. Nyamal Tuor is a Yale student, South Sudanese American Yale student, and a third year student in the United States of America. And she has been talking about the marriage, South Sudanese marriage, especially the Noor marriage. And she related a story about a Sudanese girl who was married. You know, it when her marriage went over social media so massive, and it was all over social media, and South Sudanese and other communities outside South Sudanese communities talk about our marriage, because one made our marriage so massively discussed is because she was married to a guy who got 9 wives already, like Nyamal pointed out. And she was like she was, I don't know how to describe it, but she was like so many men, you know, bidding for her. And she was she was taken by the high bidder. And I don't know whether there's any follow-up mechanism now how she's doing with the man. This is not about the love, but about the materials, about the cows and the cattle. And what Nyamal said, she said there's Qatar is seen as a currency, by the Qatar-loving people. You have a girl, you have a carol, and you have so many girls, so you are rich. Your bank account is growing so big, and this is how people have taken in that. But the bad side of this is because in some cultures they do not know the age of the girl is married off, how old is she, and the girl has no a lot of say into the marriage. But in most cases in South Sudan, the girl has right who to marry, whether she is young or has grown to a marriageable age. She has a right who to marry, who not to marry. And it's always agreement between the girl and the boy. And once they agree, there are steps to be followed. It was once to be discussed behind closed doors. So if they both like one another, a boy and a girl, to get married, and then the peers, the group, the age mates of the girl, the friends of the girl, the closest advisors of the girl will come in and talk to the man to make an assessment whether it's the right man for her. And if they agree that this is the right man for her, and then they will go to the next step. They will tell the girl, well, tell it to your parents. Because it's the boy's parents who will know it first, right? Because the boy will not go out and you know, have a relationship with a girl and say, oh, I want to marry, this girl is the one I want to marry without the approval. No, it doesn't go that way. So the boy's parents will have, confirmed the boy's aspiration to marry the girl, and the girl will go to the next step by coming to the parents that this boy will marry me. So it's now going between the two parents, and when the girl's parents accepted that, and then that's when the pre-arrangements will be made. So it's a long process. It takes a while. It takes a while because elders are being involved, and the girl's parents will be involved, and then the background of the girl will be run, and the background of the boy will be run, just to make sure that they're clean. There's no hidden things, you know. There's no criminal things going on in from the background. It might be one of the relatives, and also one of the things that they want to find out is that is there any relationship people have related somewhere. Because in one of the cultures in South Sudanese cultures, especially in the Nuerland, incest is a criminal act. So a boy should marry not a very close relative. So they go down to seven generations. So anything beyond seven generations, you are okay, you're safe, you can marry. But before seven generations, no, that's incest. It's a criminal act. So with that comes to the end of our program today. Very good topic, and we will continue from there next Saturday with another topic, something similar to that. And thank you for joining in, and thank you for tuning in, and thank you for following us. You can download the podcast. I think it's available every other day, and they are there. And you can share them if you like. This is a community radio. It's a voice of the community. And until next time, we'll see you again. From this studio, I'm Godwa Chul, and bye-bye.
She's just a girl, and she's on fire. Ourselves of other,
hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got both feet on the ground and she's burning it down. Oh, she got her head in the clouds and she's not backing down.
That was our show for this week.
Take care until next Saturday, same time, 10 to 5, on Planet FM 104.6.
And on the web, www.plantaudio.org.nz/resetterradio.